And blessed to be a part of your day, Kevin Miller in the morning. Our great friend Dave Pezzo will join us in a second. Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, and on Facebook and Twitter at Pezzo Financial. Dave, good to have you with us.
It's good to be here, Kevin.
You know, it was great having you at the great Thanksgiving banquet at the Boise Rescue Mission the other day. What did you think of that?
Oh, Kevin, it's always it's such a neat event, and what the Rescue Mission does is it's always right there. Every time I go to one of these things, it touches my heart. It really does. I'm not sure I'll ever get used to that. I'm sure you feel the same way, Kevin, all the different times you hang out with the folks at the Rescue Mission and you see how, you know, how giving they are, how generous they are with their time, their life, and changing people's lives. It's really inspiring.
And in addition to that, it was great to see Chief Bones there along with several other people, and our friends from Channel 7, Larry Gebert, Mark Johnson. I don't know who did a better job singing, the Broncos or Mark Johnson. you were really into Mark Johnson singing, doing his best Elvis.
He was doing a good job. He's quite a singer. He's quite a singer. I thought that was very impressive. He loves to entertain, doesn't he?
Indeed. Speaking of entertaining, let's take a look at the House's Tax Cut and Jobs Act. People say it's going to lower taxes on companies in an effort to make them more competitive and discourage them from moving abroad. The bill reduces the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%, and the rate for pass-through businesses down from 25% with some restrictions. Many families would also pay less, although Speaker of the House Paul Ryan admitted that won't be the case for everyone, and we'll continue to go give you more of a rundown as the Senate debates it this week. But again, you have your critics, and I'll play devil's advocate with you at KIDO Talk Sure. Radio, who says this is a kiss to big business and doesn't do enough for small business. Your thoughts as we break down this tax reform bill?
Kevin, I can't disagree with that statement, and I think it's refreshing that there was actually an honest comment from a politician that not every family under every circumstance is going to get a tax cut. That's pretty obvious, but for the enemies of trying to make any kind of change to the tax code, that's more fodder for them. But the reality is that most all people are going to have a tax cut, and that's an advantage. Most importantly to me is that we do something on the business side, because we have been watching for many, many years this complete transition of businesses moving out of the United States and setting up tax headquarters somewhere else, because we have one of the highest, if not the highest, tax rates in the world on business. It's absurd. It's absolutely ridiculous that we do that. This is America, and we need to do something about it. Is the bill perfect? No, it's not perfect. I have some stuff I want, too, and they just won't give it to me. And so if they don't, I'm going to vote against it.
Wait a minute. Do you use that voice when you're with Maggie and Doug on Channel 7?
Well, I try not to. I reserve it just for you.
I feel, all of us feel so privileged
so special, yeah,
that you don't share that voice with Channel 7. Anyway, I'm sorry. So, and you bring up a very good point. People have talked about Ireland for years because they have one of the lowest tax rates. Again, let me play devil's advocate with you here. And yes, I want businesses to be competitive. I want businesses to stay here. But people have said that, yeah, we have a higher tax rate, but we have better accountants. Mm-hmm. We have better people that find these deductions. So really, the tax rate isn't as it appears to be, because if you hire someone, just like you hire a good lawyer, you can get a better deal.
You're totally right, Kevin. That's 100% true. But for example, with GE and hiring, they're legendary at figuring all that stuff out. They are legendary.
GE, the poster children of corporate welfare. Yes,
correct. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And you can see how well that's done for them. Right. The stock is as low as it's been for 30 years. It's absolutely unbelievable how bad they've operated. Part of that, I have to believe, is the simple thing that you are sitting there trying to figure out how to do things in a tax efficient way instead of what is best economically. It points you in the wrong direction, just like corporate welfare does. If we really can't support, let's say, green energy of some certain kind, and then we wind up with whatever that solar was, talking about, all that corporate graph, it leads us in the wrong direction. It does that with corporations also.
The big solar company that Obama put a bunch of government money into and went under.
Yeah, because they were big supporters of Obama. Right. The classic case of corporate welfare. And so That type of thing leads to nothing more than taxpayer money being wasted and business money going in the wrong direction. That is the part of the problem. The second part of the problem is that's not every company out there. So they have to compete. Maybe it's Honeywell. It's trying to compete directly with GE and other areas, and they don't have as many write-offs because maybe they're in some power generation business that
right.
they don't operate. Why would we want to do that where you can't compete on a level playing field and that companies aren't the same? And the final point I want to make is taxes are not static. This is something that they pass on to consumers. We act like this is some kind of gift to business, and it is, but it's also going to affect itself in lower prices to consumers. Businesses don't pay taxes. That's a fact. They simply don't. They tag it on to the cost of goods to you and I.
Now, this is something that you have been urging for many, many years on Money Matters. We have, in my glee to keep up with you, which again is very small when it comes to matters of finance and money, but it's something we've touched on. And this is something that, well, I can't wait to get your reaction from. Many businesses, Dave, as you've reported, have been holding cash overseas to avoid the 35% U.S. taxes. I mean, Apple alone, Google, all these people have gazillions of dollars overseas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now they would get to bring that money home at a tax rate of 12%.
Mm-hmm.
The entire business tax system would also change from a worldwide system in which money anywhere around the globe is taxed to a territorial system in which mostly money made in the U.S. that is taxed. Businesses have long lobbied for the change. Let's talk about going from 35% to 12%. And what would that mean if these corporations would bring that money back into the U.S. economy?
You know, first of all, let me go ahead and say the critics will say all they're going to do is stock buybacks and dividends and increase dividends. And the first thing I would say is that, okay, so what's bad about that? How is that bad that's good for the stockholders, which are the pension funds and endowments and you and I? Why would that be bad if we have higher cash flow coming in the form of dividends? It doesn't make sense to me that that's a bad thing. But if we say that that's going to happen, the critics are simply saying this is going to happen, that's going to happen. I think when we bring trillions of dollars back, that's a positive. It's sitting overseas doing nothing. Anytime, and we say, well, 25% at best will go to work. Well, best case now is that none of it goes to work. It sits over there. So it doesn't make sense to fight something like this, and I think it's just we don't know what the numbers are, Kevin, but we're going to have some economic development from that because we just don't know what businesses are going to do with it in full. We know they're going to buy back stock, raise dividends. Some of them will expand their operations with that cash. But either way, it's better coming back to the United States than staying overseas.
Dave Petzo with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here as we continue to take a look at the GOP tax reform effort that will not get any Democratic votes. Apparently, but some good news for small business. The National Federation of Independent Businesses, the largest small business lobby, was initially against the bill, but now, after Republicans made some changes, it's given its blessing. 95% of American businesses are organized as pass-through companies, LLCs, S-Corps, partnerships, and they pass through the business income to the owner's individual tax rate. The House plan lowers the top rate from 39.6% to 25% for small businesses, excluding companies like consultants and lawyers. And it goes into this complex formula where only the 25% rate only applies to about 30% of the business income. But the reality is most small businesses, 85%, already pay tax rates at 25% or less. To help out the mom and pops, the final bill has a 9% rate on the first $75,000 in income for businesses, owners making $150,000 or less. Plus, but that tax break phases in, meaning it isn't fully available till 2022. For people that are in the small businesses that you have been such a fan of that we've talked about for years mm-hmm. at KIDO Talk Radio, whether it's a trade business or what have you, what does this mean?
It's all good. Is it perfect? Of course not. A perfect thing would be if I paid no tax. That would be perfect to me. But the reality is this is a good, solid move in the right direction. In fact, it's not a solid move. I don't want to diminish this. This is a huge move. We have had for years and years and years and years, and certainly the last 8 years, we've had a complete roadblock to having any kind of tax reform. And the reality is we're now the highest tax country in the world. This, again, makes no sense. It's not pro-business. This is going to help. It isn't perfect, but it's going to help a lot to reduce tax rates. And even if it only is 30% of the businesses that are having an actual reduction, those 30% of the businesses, that's a big deal to them. If other people are already in a low tax bracket from write-offs and maybe the business isn't operating all that efficiently or whatever, that's called creative destruction. That's what happens all the time. People start up businesses.
You're a big
fan. It doesn't work.
You're a big fan of that.
Huge.
You are?
Of that.
See, I listen. I listen.
It is what makes the world go around and why you and I have iPhones and things like that that are really cool. Because we get rid of the old, we go to the new, we decide as consumers what we love and what we want to own and what we want to buy. It's
okay.
A beautiful process.
Let me take issue with you for a minute. Did you do any of this Black Friday stuff?
No.
Okay. I couldn't believe how cheap televisions are. And maybe televisions are just going the way of the rotary phones.
Yep.
You've got, and I did a little bit of research, which means I looked at online ads. Now, this is crazy. This is crazy because they have these big TVs. Now, remember back in the day when a 20-inch color was a big deal?
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Okay. At KIDO Talk Radio. So now they've got 85-inch whatever. And I'm going, how can they only charge this much? Because you know the deal is, you buy it, 3 months later it goes down several thousand dollars. So I was looking at the Best Buy thing because, again, I had nothing to do in between watching the Sunday shows. And they had a television for like $50,000 and another one by Samsung, another one for $19,000. And really what it tells me is the technology, as great as it is now, they've already moved on to the next technology. And essentially, and as much as I love television, unless you're going to, you know, live in the box, $20,000 or I think there was one for even $50,000,
right,
which was crazy.
Yeah.
But they've already moved on from the UHD to something else.
Yeah.
You know, because what was it? 180 was big. Now it's 240. That's become the norm. And then there's going to be something else. But it was amazing to me, in our day, you had a television and you kept it until the tubes went out. And sometimes you bought the tubes and you fixed it and it was great.
They had such thing as a TV repairman.
Right. which just, again, this transformation that is happening in our society today.
Yep.
You have people not going to games, so they're making it like an experience as if the game isn't enough. You know, free Wi-Fi or what have you.
Right.
So you can text while you're supposed to be watching live action. It's amazing.
It is amazing. No, the technology is incredible. You remember when they first put in a Dallas stadium?
Yeah.
They put that big TV in?
Right.
That was $1 million.
Oh, that's
for that huge TV.
It's a bargain.
It was at the time. Right. Now they've gone way past that, of course. But it's astounding, the clarity of that big a TV. What was it, 3 weeks ago I was in Seattle watching the
Seahawks
game, right?
You
watch these
screens. Are you meeting with Paul Allen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So wait a minute.
We're working on some moon landings.
You went to Seattle.
Uh-huh.
You went to a Seahawks game to watch television.
Yes.
How does that work?
They're right there in your face.
So they've got a big screen there at Central.
They do, but the funny thing is you walk in there, and they've got the Mariner Stadium's right next to it, okay?
Right.
Right. So you go in there, and it's like, come on in, and you can go have a $6 beer or something. It's very, very cheap compared to going into the stadium.
Right.
So thousands of people are funneling through, and I'm thinking, well, that's great. Let's go ahead and go over there.
You're a fiscal conservative, so you want a $6 beer.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. So you have six of them before you leave, right? That's not going to go. What can go wrong with that? But anyway, you know, you go in there and you have all these games on everywhere on this giant screen. And they divide it up into like eight different
football
games.
They just didn't
have
the Seahawks on. They had other games?
No. Oh, well, I don't know. I'm assuming the Seahawks game was on. But
right.
I actually had a several $100 ticket. I think I'm going to go watch the game.
Right.
Not watch it there. But the point is, before the game, you're watching all these others. And it's so clear. It's so clear. It's hundreds of feet away from you. And it's crystal clear, and it's ginormous. I mean, the technology is off the charts.
Now, do you watch the TV, or do you watch the players?
Well, that's for some folks, I guess, that want the $6 beers, they've probably stayed there and watched the TV.
Right.
I chose to go watch the game.
You wanted the ROI on your investment. See, that's why you're Dave Petzo.
Right, yes. Yeah.
More coming up next at KIDO Talk Radio. And we're back with our great friend Dave Petzo. Let's go back to the tax bill again. This, no surprise, from the Washington Post. By the way, you can reach Dave on Facebook. You can reach him on Twitter. You can reach him your website.
Website's easiest. Yep. PetsoFinancial.com.
All right. Or at the Petso Center in downtown Boise. I can't really convince you to move your world headquarters, can I? I mean, Meridian's happening. Look, we got a Dairy Queen and Star. CUNA's expanding. Are any of these cities trying to woo you away from downtown Boise? If not, I'm going to give them the idea to do that.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Napa. Sure. We got a new mayor in Napa. I mean, you know.
It's they're wonderful places, and no. No,
not yet.
Not yet.
Well, you know,
can't see myself doing that.
If the Baltimore Colts can move,
yes.
Who's to say one day?
That's absolutely true.
All right.
It's absolutely true.
So you know, you never know if those offers are out there.
Yeah. Well, the
price
they keep
is right.
Jacking up the tax rates, and
that's
boy,
right.
They do. I'm telling you, along with CCDC and all the money sitting in the coffers for all our buddies, right?
I mean.
That's a lot. There's a lot of money in that kitty there. A lot of corporate welfare around.
So let's talk a little bit about the rich doing very well.
Yep.
Let's see. The estate tax, which is paid only when the property and assets worth over $5.5 million are passed on to heirs, doubles to $11 million in 2018. Around $22 million for couples, meaning a lot fewer people have to pay it. Again, many people, and I'm trying to think who was really critical of the estate tax. Maybe it was Mike Miniger, because I spent 75 hours with him for the past 2 weeks. Or it was someone else, but they, you know, they talked about the estate tax. And if it wasn't Mike Miniger, it was somebody else saying that, you know, why in the world would you tax someone out of business? Remember, they were worried about the New York Yankees because of the estate tax.
Yes.
You couldn't pass it down. If you build something, especially family farms, mm-hmm. especially family businesses, why in the world would the government take its chunk, really penalizing people that have really made something and want to give it to their family, you know, that legacy, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's why. And I think it's not just a, you know, everything's always cased in an economic perspective. And it, to me, it's a moral question. If you've paid taxes your entire life, a lot of taxes, and you've somehow managed to be so successful that you've navigated the tax minefield and accumulated some money, why upon death do we get to take another whack? Why can't they just give their money to whoever they want to, whatever the amount is? To me, it's a moral question. What is a justification for upon your death, Kevin, that we go ahead and steal half your money? What's the justification? I don't understand. You see, just tell me why that seems like a morally sound choice to you. And the same thing with many of the tax code. Why is it that people should pay 50% and more? Is that what? Because most people don't feel that way, that it's moral and ethical to take more than 25%. In all polling, no numbers ever come up higher than 25% is the fairest number of how much they should take. So yet when we're talking about the tax code, we're always like, shuffle over here, shuffle over there, a give and take here, instead of asking the fundamental question, how much is too much? How much encumbrance by government is too much, and does it slow down the economy?
And Kevin Miller with our great friend Dave Petso. Quickly, Dave, let's take a look at, before we get back to the tax cut bill, mm-hmm. anything that you want to share with us today in the voice that you won't use on Channel 7?
I think that I think they're going to get a tax bill, and I think it's important that they do, really from a legislative perspective. And so I think they're going to make progress this week, and that's what I would watch for in the markets as well. I think it's an important issue. This is another big week for the tax bill, that they get it through. And if they can, we can get it on to reconciliation, and they can come up with a decent bill. This is a starter. I think it's important that we reduce corporate taxes, we move forward on tax reform, and we have some legislative breakthroughs here so that hopefully the Trump agenda can continue. It is a very strong pro-business agenda and lower government agenda, and the more success that it has, I think will feed on itself. We've talked about this so many times, Kevin, about the animal spirits, right, getting cut loose and watching this happen. We're seeing it with business confidence. Consumer confidence is skyrocketing. We saw that with the great numbers over Black Friday weekend, right, the Thanksgiving weekend. Good numbers coming out. This is all from a confidence perspective economically, and I think it's time that we move forward in Washington, D.C. and keep that agenda out front.
You know, finally, it looks like the per tax deduction credit for children will go up from $1,000 to $1,600. That's good for families as well.
Super good. There's no question about it. This is a good bill. It's a solid bill. It's a good start. And everybody can pick it apart because there's, I want my deduction on mortgage interest. I want my deduction on this or that. There's always going to be items out there, and they just simply can't deal with every single one item. Some people are not going to have as big an advantage. I think somebody called last week about their son who gets, I don't know, $50,000 or something like that in a for a student.
Right, scholarships and such, right.
Right, and you know, okay, now it's going to be taxed. Well, you know, honestly, it always should be. It's not something anybody gets free money that isn't taxed. It was a loophole before. It's being closed. And so those are the kinds of things that one-off are going to hurt individuals out there. There is no perfect bill. And if we can generally have something that reduces our tax burden, particularly on business, keeps businesses in the United States, but overall gets out of the way, I think you're going to see more and more economic development.
Dave Petzo, we will catch you this Saturday, correct?
We sure will. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
Fox News, we're here to court, you decide.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM and 580 AM.
Yesterday was, right? I mean, what you talk about all the headline news and markets getting pushed around, and is that something we should be worried about with the president? Boy, it's just a whole lot, really. You think about that, the market falling 350 points at one point yesterday, coming back to look like yet another boring day. Why? And what's going on? And when we're talking about 350 points, is that a big deal? Should I be thinking that's a big deal? That's the thing that people, I think, miss so much is 350 points. I got to try to guess where the market is and try to figure it out. I should have traded that. I'll bet people made lots and lots of money. You can hear that people out there. I'll bet people made lots and lots of money with those big swings. Like they timed it, right? They knew it would fall 350 and then they ripped higher? Nah. Some did. Some got killed. That's the way trading works. It's not something we should be chasing or even thinking about or worrying about. Let's think about this in a big picture sense for a minute, okay? Yeah, little picture is this is a little unnerving. The press won't stop. They will not stop. They absolutely feel that they have got to go get this guy, no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's right. It certainly doesn't matter if it's right. You know, we certainly, those of us that are much more freedom-oriented, and that's the only way I know how to phrase it because I don't think it's necessarily a conservative or a liberal perspective, was that Obama was horrifying, taking away personal liberties and businesses and penalizing them and taxing and all those things. It was terrible. But nobody thought, let's figure out a way to impeach the guy. So this won't stop. It's going to continue. But why did the market come back? Because in a big sense, bigger sense, anyone who would be in position, whether it's Mike Pence, anyone, would be pushing for less regulation. Without a doubt, lots less regulation. Lower taxes. So the real focus has been on the tax bill. Will we have legislative victory or not? We have to be very careful with that. And when we think about these things, we've got to be super careful about thinking about 300 points as a big move. When we're talking about just over 1%, oh, it's a big move in a one day. But remember when the market was much, much, much lower, and we were swinging 1,000 points. In a day. That's volatility. That was a little frightening. This is not. But it does stir people up. In other words, it kind of makes them feel like, now maybe, yeah, see, I probably should take some off of the table. And when we're talking about something that's going to be long-term, something is going to be maybe even multi-decade, why do we think of this? It really makes no sense. And it puts us in a really funny place. And I've seen this, and so I want to share this with you because it's a very recent one. An incredibly bright guy. Really is. Inherited a chunk of dough. And he's doing well. He would absolutely and has been very successful in his own life. But inherited a chunk. So we invested it. And, of course, the market's doing well, so it's doing very well. And it's invested for long term. But the certainty is that the market is going to go down. I don't know why or what has fussed this person to get them to literally want to liquidate and try to time the market. The answer really when we think about that and when we think about an event like this, and it's not a big event, I don't want to overdo this. I think it's just another lesson. It's a small event, really. Could become big, I suppose, if there is something there, but they've sure been looking for something there for a year. But the point is this. There's always a reason. There's always very good reason that you can hang a hat on, or 10 reasons to hang your hat on to why the market's going to correct. And until we can get through our minds, the corrections are normal, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives. And that's okay. It's not a world-ending thing. It's okay. Until we can get that through our head, we can't ever really live in peace, which is really crazy, as I talk about all the time, right? You've got this mountain. The highest returning investment, fully liquid, trades every day, super cheap. You have no money, it's okay. $50 a month, you buy in. Nothing has anything like those characteristics, let alone, let's go back to the original one, right? Nothing's even close. It's not even arguable. Oh, I know somebody who's a real estate developer or something. That's fine. But that's their business. That's their business. But buying homes and renting them out doesn't return 10% a year, and the market does. And you're not allowed to have any management responsibilities at all. Not at all. So we take that, and somehow temporary, periodic corrections outweigh this. And I constantly have to ask myself, why? Why would you do that? What a terrible place to put yourself into. And it's very, very dangerous. It's dangerous on two levels. One, if you're right and the market does go down, when do you get back in? At what level? Is it down 5%? Is it down 7%? Is it down 10%? What, you know, whispering from the spirit is going to tell you the time to get in. I mean, we talk about Warren Buffett and John Templeton and things like that, and it's oh, yeah, right, they're great, they're amazing, they're awesome, and none of them, and they all universally said we can't time the market. But you can, even though the Market Timing Hall of Fame is empty. Now, this is not at all like, well, what if I need my kids going to school next year and I need $20,000 for tuition? Then take it out. You've had a marvelous run in the market. Leave. What if I need income for the rest of my life? Well, you should be planning for that every single day. What are you going to do for income 18 months from now? And then 6 months from now? 18 months from then? And 2 years? What are you doing today to prepare for income down the road? Not, is it time to get out so we can get back in? That kind of thinking is just so incredibly dangerous. We don't realize, even when we're right, we're trapped. We're trapped. And we just don't realize it. Also, then, of course, there's a danger of being right, is the, like the guy in the casino that wins the first time, right? Everybody knows what a disaster that is. Right? 21-year-old goes to the casino. Mom, Dad, I won! Silence on the phone, right? Oh, no. Because we all know what's coming. Disaster. Anyway, as we can see, these things going back and forth, it's very dangerous to even think that way. So think about when you need income to take it out at appropriate times. When you need to buy a new car. When you're going to take a trip, you take a chunk out at good times. But will we play that all-or-none game, I want to fully liquidate, and I'll be getting back in a couple of months? I don't know what that is. That makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. We need to be careful, really careful. Anyway, we saw that again, and we saw that on Friday, didn't we? We saw the market go down severely, come all the way back to nothing. To nothing. There's probably nothing there. No matter how hard they search, they don't get to impeach the President of the United States just because they don't agree with him politically. And gosh, Hillary was supposed to be the president. Don't we understand? But you see, it doesn't matter. Even if they win, they don't get Hillary. And we just had tax reform passed. Oh, they've got reconciliation. It'll be noisy. And that's the way the news cycle works, right? A lot of noise, a lot of noise, a lot of noise. Everybody remember the hurricane? Oh, yeah, that's right. It was huge. It was enormous. And we need to talk about new floodplain plans and all those things. Oh, yeah, that's right. I wonder what's going on in Houston now. Never covered, is it? Never covered. And you can just go on story after story after it just hits the news, bam, done, and nobody talks about it. Like forever. Like forever. Amazing. We get caught up in this phenomenal, intense news cycle that means nothing. Nothing. To your 30-year plan of income for life. Nothing. So what we need to be thinking about always with our money, whether this is in your mind was like nothing, I didn't even know. Didn't realize the market was down 350 points at one point for crying out loud. Gee whiz, what are you talking about? Who cares? A lot of people did. It was a big move. It's what a lot of people were looking for. But a lot of people have been nervous for a very long time, and this is why these lessons keep coming up. Why do we do this? We try to drive ourselves crazy for no good reason. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, this is the only segment live today, because in the next hour, I interviewed Mike Simpson, our congressman. And, hey, I got to say all right off the bat, I'm sorry, I know his cell phone connection was not great, but I think the content was fantastic. I really enjoyed doing it. I learned a lot about the man, Mike Simpson. I really didn't know a lot about him, and I felt very good about this congressman. And I also felt like we have a good congressional group. Anyway, this was, I thought, a very informative with all that's going on in D.C. and the tax bill and all these other things. I hope you enjoy it. But anyway, we're going to be, I'll be back after this quick break. Hopefully, you'll ring us up. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters.
As your Broncos host Fresno State Saturday at 5:45. Purchase your tickets today at broncosports.com.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on KITO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM and 580 AM.
Yo, we're coming back. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number. Quick ring if you would. This is our last segment live today as next hour. And I certainly hope that the sound quality is good enough. It's a little break in it, but the content I thought was fantastic from Congressman Simpson. So hopefully you enjoy that in the next hour. I know I did. I really did. No kidding. I just really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation all the way around the political environment. So very good. And honestly, he's a very quiet person. He really does not seem to crave the limelight. And so we don't know a lot about him, but he's certainly well-rounded in his thoughts, and I think you'll enjoy it very much. All right, and our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Jim. Jim, how you doing today?
Morning, Dave. How you doing?
Good. Good, thanks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, probably due to the technology that you love, there'll be a few extra seats in the BSU stadium today.
That is true. Well, and are you going to watch the game at home with the technology you love?
Well, see, I'm an old codger. I don't have cable. I don't have ESPN. So, no. I'll be watching football, but it won't be BSU.
Well, that's a bummer. You know, that's why they have sports bars for people like us. Because guess what? I don't have cable either, although I now have this thing called Sling, which is now becoming the the technology I love, because you can hook it up for $20 and then you can unhook it when football season's over. How about that?
Sounds good. Well, I got a good positive example for you. thanks to the Flynn dip yesterday, I got my Texas Instruments that I wanted.
Ah, yeah. Good play there. I like that. That's right. You mentioned that you put it in below the market. Nicely done. Good.
Yeah, maybe a 2 or 3%, not a lot, but enough to get it. So it makes me feel somewhat good.
Yeah, that's good. Yep, that's good. So the dip played right into your hands. So good.
So anyway, I guess you're probably in Seattle, and if you have another call, we can sign off.
No, we're just about we're rolling out of time. What I am here now is I'm in Santa Fe. I came here. I'm on an advisory board for an investment company.
Santa Fe,
So, yeah, which is interesting, and it's an interesting place.
Well, you know,
7,000 feet, I feel like I can't breathe when I walk across the room. But
I'm from Clovis, New Mexico, and the first job I had out of college in 1968 was in Santa Fe, and I worked in the state capitol for 6 months.
Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. It was great. It was a little bit of a pull. You know, I just graduated from college, and my father he was a CPA. And he used to have a business partner who was now the head of the finance and budget department in the state of New Mexico. So through some pull from him, he got me a job, or I'd probably still be in that house in Clovis.
That's great.
But then once I was out of the nest, I took out the old wings and flew to California. So anyway, I love Santa Fe.
Yeah, it's an interesting place. I've been here a couple times with this company, and I'll be here a couple more times over the next year. I've got a couple-year commitment to this. So I'll get very familiar, and also with some of the hills, like Los Alamos is where I'm off to this afternoon. So,
well, be sure and look at the, I guess, the replicas of the two atom bombs, the fat man and small boy, I think it is.
Yeah, that's not quite right, but you're right.
Maybe little boy, something like that.
I think it's little boy, yeah.
Anyway, fat man and little boy. Anyway.
There you go.
So anyway, I'll sign off and take care and have fun.
All right, we'll do. You have a great rest of the day now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. You know, it is interesting when we think about buying the dip and how hard it is for people to do it, because it's just simply hard when things are going down, even if it's on a one-day basis, right? When things dip, you want to get the best possible price. And in hindsight, you would have wanted to get the dip of 300 points. But at that point, it's looking like it's going to get worse. And if you bought down 200, you felt like an idiot because it was down 350, right? I mean, the dip got worse, got very severe. It is hard to do. And that's why this whole idea of trading, you know, trying to find just the right price, doesn't work. That's why investment companies that have a different thought process work so well, do so well, because they are not thinking about an exact price level like, oh, I feel so stupid because we got this shares of this company that we've been investigating and feel great about owning today, and we were able to add to our position a little bit down, but it got lower. They don't live and die by that, and that's something we need to recognize too. You don't need to be right by the end of the trading day. You don't have to be right in the next hour. And when you have that kind of an attitude, it makes it a lot more relaxing. And I really think, you know, the fun thing is, you know, hanging out here with this advisory board too, I got to admit, it's just one of those fun things. It's not just fun from the standpoint of, ooh, this is just awesome. It's so much fun to be here in Santa Fe. It's not, honestly, right? I mean, it's not. I'll enjoy the weekend and go hiking and go do some cool things, but it's a long ways to get here. We are hanging around advisors, investment professionals that have been around for a long time, talking money, talking about managing client expectations. How do we do this? How do we get better? How do we be better? This investment firm, how do you serve us, the investment community, the advisor community, better? How do you get better at what you do? Those questions, and you kind of ponder all those. It's a fun thing to do. It is interesting. That, for me, is the why. Why would I come this far? Why would I volunteer my time to do this? Because when you hang around experienced people that excel at what they do, some of that rubs off, and there's a collective learning that occurs. And so, and I think that that's the reason why when we, you know, for me, that I like to go to these things. Love to. But also, it's why, what makes all of us better at whatever it is we're striving to go. It's why people go away and go to conferences, seminars, to hang out. But it helps add peace and understanding to what we do. I hope you all enjoy Congressman Simpson in the next hour. I know I will be. Hope you will be. We'll talk to you next week.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, of course, and I'm here with Congressman Mike Simpson. Lots going on in D.C., and so we thought, let's see if we can get some inside scoop of what is going on and whether this tax bill is going to pass, whether we can get some reconciliation, and all of the other, the dysfunction that's going on. So, Congressman, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it very much.
You bet. Good to be with you.
Let's start with the tax bill, because that's certainly high up in the news. It's talked about every day. Obviously, the Congress has passed that, passed their version, and done their work, which is good to see because, obviously, with health care, and we'll circle back to that later, it didn't work so well. So let's what do you feel is going on there from the Senate perspective? There's some no votes out there or seemingly no's. Do you think they're going to get something passed?
Yeah, I do. As you know, the House passed their version of what tax reform will be, and the Senate is working on their own separate version. I think they will actually get something passed. What it will be, it won't be the same as the House version, but it's important that they pass something so that we can go to conference, because what comes out of conference won't be the House bill or the Senate bill. It will be a combination of both, where we get in and work out the differences between the two. There are some things in the Senate bill that probably won't survive. There's some things in the House bill that probably won't survive as we try to cobble together enough votes in both the House and Senate to put it on the president's desk. And I think we'll actually get it done and probably get it done by Christmas.
Outstanding. That's a pretty positive note, given all the negative that we've got. This senator is unsure, and that one over here, and all. And obviously, the Democrats are totally united on this, and are voting no on everything. Do you think there's any chance after this, or any time that this can, that some of the Democrats are going to come along on anything? Is that, or is this just digging in the heels and trying to best they can fail the Trump presidency?
Well, you know, I thought at one time that we might get some Senate Democrats on board with this, but the senators decided in their version put in the repeal of the individual mandate on the health care, which drove all the Democrats away from it that might have potentially voted for it. But I think they've got their heels dug in pretty strongly about voting against voting against anything that that the Republicans put out. It would be nice if they would actually come forward with their ideas and stuff instead of just opposing what the Republicans are doing, because, you know, almost everybody agrees that we need to reform the tax system, both Republicans and Democrats. Now, we might have differences of opinion on how to do that, but everybody agrees the tax system is far too complicated, that corporate tax rates are way too high, that we've got to reduce the cost of money by reducing tax rates and so forth, that we need to go away from the worldwide tax system that we currently have and go to a territorial tax system like every other industrialized country in the world has. So there's broad agreement in that. And I would think if we could sit down and work out the differences, we could actually attract some Democrats. But right now it's opposed Trump more than anything else.
It's pretty amazing. And you know, we'll come back to some of this with Trump later today. But I'd really like to knock out on this tax bill. Do you think that that'll be some of these things like the individual mandate, that in the end, that's going to get tossed out? Are there any, or have you really thought through what you think? Some of those seem like bargaining chips, if you will, that are easily tossed.
I don't know whether that'll get tossed out or not. It was, originally I thought it was a bad idea to put it in there. If it's in the final compromise, or the final conference version that comes back to the House, I've been trying to decide whether you could lose votes or gain votes by given the individual mandate. In the Senate, it appears that they needed to do that in order to get some of the more conservative votes on, plus it freed up about $350 billion that they could then use for tax relief. And most Republicans believe that the individual mandate ought to be repealed anyway, so they kind of put it in there both for numerical to get the $350 billion and also because it would bring on some Republican votes. But I don't know how that's going to play out in the House if it's in the final version. So it just depends on how the conference works out. But, you know, you talk about the individual senators over there saying, you know, that they're leaning no or they're concerned about this or that. It was the same way in the House. We had groups of people that were concerned about a variety of things. We cobbled together 237 votes to pass it, and the same thing is true in the Senate, in that these individuals, where there's only a two-vote majority, they have a great deal of power, and so they are trying to get to yes, but they have individual concerns, like Senator Johnson from Wisconsin has the concern that it doesn't do enough for small business, it does too much for corporations and stuff. We'll work out those differences, and I think we'll get to yes with these senators that have individual concerns about it.
No, that's good. Now, can you maybe walk us through the what actually happens here? So let's pretend they do pass their bill, and obviously it's a different bill than the Congress has passed. Then it goes into what is this, a group of 20 people, five? What actually happens at that point to reconcile?
Well, what happens is the House passes their version. The Senate will pass their version. One of two things can happen. the Senate could take up the House bill and just pass it, and then it'd be done, or the House could take up the Senate bill and pass it. But I don't think either one of those will happen. There will be different versions, and then the House and Senate will both appoint conferees. And I don't know how large that will be. I would suspect it's generally at least 10 members of the House and 10 members of the Senate, maybe even more. And they will sit down and then have a conference and work out those differences between the House and Senate bill. And then a conference report comes to the House and then the Senate that has to pass both bodies.
Gotcha. And by, again, a simple majority, and it can't be, they're not going to be worried about a filibuster or anything like that, correct?
Correct. And a conference report that comes out can't be amended. So it's the report, you vote it up or down in both the House and the Senate.
Okay. So the 10, or it could be, it's a variable number then when it goes to reconciliation. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, however many the Speaker and the Majority Leader in the Senate decide to put on the conference committee, the minority will have not an equal number, but will have members obviously from the Democratic side on the House and the Senate on the conference committee. So the conference committee could be as large as, you know, all total probably 40 people. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's hard to get much done with 40 people, though. That's a large number.
Well, it is, but what's really important is that the majority on the conference is going to be Republicans from both the House and the Senate, and they'll have to just work out the differences in that. And I think that Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell have been talking about it already. So I think the conference will get done and get done fairly easily.
Gotcha. Why? Let's kind of, you know, the critics say that it's this is all for big business, right? And so. It's only for them. It's a tax break for them at the expense of individuals. That's the mantra coming from the Democratic side. And, of course, the media is complicit in that. What would you say to that?
Well, when they say that all the benefits of this tax cut go to the rich, or, you know, overwhelming majority of them, they always include the corporations and stuff in there. I look at it as lowering. You can't have the highest corporate tax rate in the world and be competitive. Now, some people will say, well, corporations don't pay that higher rate because all the loopholes and all that kind of stuff and the deductions and things that they have in the tax code. But, you know, your business decisions should not be based on how they affect your taxes. It should be based on what is best for your business.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, because of the way our tax code has become so complicated, businesses make business decisions based on how it's going to affect their taxes, which is, I think, the wrong thing to do. What we need to do is get rid of those loopholes, if you want to call them loopholes, or those deductions or other things that are in the tax code, and then lower the overall rate. The only way you are ultimately going to balance this budget and get us back on a fiscal track here, of solid fiscal track in this country, is two things need to be done. One is you have to address the complicated tax code that we currently have and get economic growth, which I believe this tax reform will do. Right now, we've had the slowest economic growth in a decade that we've ever had. And this, if we can get growth rates up to 3%, 3.5%, maybe some people are even saying 4%, you will find that the federal government gets a lot more money and the budget deficit gets substantially reduced and even goes away. The other thing you've got to do is you've got to reform the entitlement programs, which are today over 70% of all federal spending is entitlement programs, and they are growing exponentially. And we've got to get those reforms of those entitlement programs if we're going to balance this budget. So those are the two things we've got to do. This is one of them. I think this will spur economic growth. What can a corporation do if they make more money? Ultimately, they can, you know, they could give it all to their CEO, but when he takes it out, he pays taxes on it. They could give it to dividends to their stockholders. They pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Give bonuses to their employees. They pay taxes on it. Or they could save it to invest, to expand their business, to modernize it, and other things, which is a good thing that we want them to do. And that's how the economy grows. So I don't have any problem with lowering corporate tax rates. In fact, I think that's the most important part of this entire tax package.
It most certainly is. And why can't we do dynamic scoring? I mean, CBO has never been accurate on anything ever. They underestimate what expenses will be for anything, and they overestimate what tax cuts. I mean, it's almost like a liberal think tank. It's bizarre to me. Go ahead.
Dynamic scoring is very hard, and the reason that they don't do it is because CBO is not very good at it. Mm-hmm. They're not very good at predicting human behavior, frankly. I remember several years ago, it was before I got in Congress, but they decided to cut the capital gains tax, and I can't remember exactly what the numbers went to, but let's say if you had a 50% capital gains tax rate and you cut it to 25%, their assumption is you're going to lose half the revenue. So it's going to cost you, you know, half of whatever your revenue was. Congress went ahead and cut the capital gains rate. Instead of losing the revenue, what they found is they got three times as much revenue in from the capital gains tax at a lower rate, mm-hmm. because it spurred people to take money out of investments that weren't producing as well and put them in the new investments.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamic scoring is actually something that happens, but it's very hard to predict what human behavior is going to be. That's why the argument is going on now where they say this is going to cost us $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years, add to the debt. Many of us, and take most of us, believe that that's not true. That ultimately, if you just spur the economic growth in this country, that the federal government will actually get more revenue by reducing tax rates. And so, that's the debate that will go on over the next few weeks.
It is. Okay, so most people are believing there's some kind. Obviously, you cannot predict. If you knew everything exactly what happened in the economy, we still don't know, for example, what the markets are going to do and how they're going to react.
Right.
So it is human behavior. But at the same time, it's pretty obvious as if we get some impediment out of the way that business can grow, that would add economic benefit. So does the story, do they do a little of that, or is it just more of a, okay, we know this isn't true, we don't know exactly what is true, but somewhere in between is maybe we can agree that it is not going to be $1.5 trillion.
Yeah, and that will be the debate, and it depends. If you like this tax break or this tax proposal that's coming forth, then you have a tendency to maybe overcalculate what the economic benefits are going to be. If you don't like it, you underestimate what the economic benefits are going to be.
Right.
So, I'd be a little bit leery about all the numbers that you hear floating around out there about what it's going to cost or something else like that. There is an effort in the Senate to put in a provision a trigger mechanism that if the revenue doesn't come in over this 10-year period, if it doesn't come in as anticipated, that it would kick back in some tax rate or something to stop the bleeding of the revenue. And I know that there's talk about that over in the Senate. Whether they will do that or not, I don't know. The thing that is worrisome to me about that is the one thing that business needs more than anything else is predictability.
Mm-hmm.
Because they plan long term. They need to know what their tax rates are going to be in the future as they plan out for 4 or 5 years and stuff. So I would not want to do anything that makes the tax provisions unpredictable.
Right, right, right. I know we have sunset provisions of 10 years. That seemed to really spur good economic growth when Bush did it, but a shorter period is not something you can plan for.
Yeah. And the reason you have the sunset period over 10 years is called the Byrd Rule in the Senate.
Mm.
It's unique to the Senate. And so these tax cuts theoretically can only be good for 10 years. But they will go on. I mean, that's the reality. Some people are saying, the business tax cuts are permanent, but the individual tax cuts fade out after 5 years or something like that. Well, I don't think that they will. I think Congress at the time will extend them, especially if they're doing what we anticipate them to do. If they're not doing what we anticipate them to do, then we need to relook at the tax code and see what we need to do. Mm-hmm. I actually would like to see this go a lot further than we've currently gone. I would like to eliminate a lot more of the what you call loopholes and stuff. You know, I've given speeches all around the state, and I'll go to a chamber of commerce and I'll talk about the need to reform the tax code. And there will be people in the audience shaking their head going, yeah, we've got to reform this tax code. I mean, everybody agrees, we've got to reform this tax code. And I will tell them, now, wait a minute. When it happens, you're not going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's going to be some special provision that you use that is going to go away. And it's been amazing to me, not amazing, but surprising how many businesses, associations, groups, or whatever have come into my office saying, oh, this economic or this tax reform is really important, and this is a really good start and stuff. But there's this one little provision that we shouldn't do, you know?
Right, right.
And what I tell them all is, listen, what you got to do is you got to step back and look at whether it's good for the entire economy or not, if it's good for this country, and kind of put aside the impact on your individual business. Because if it's good for the country, then it's good for your business. I one time had a CEO come in that used the research and development tax credit. And their company used it to a great deal, and it was expiring at the end of the year, and they were talking about the need to extend it and so forth. This was about 5 or 6 years ago. And I said, let me ask you, would you rather have the 39% corporate tax rate and a research and development tax credit, or a 20% corporate tax rate and no research and development tax credit?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they said, well, we'll get back to you after we figure
out. After we run the numbers, yeah.
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 But the difference is that a corporate that the 20% tax rate helps every single business.
Right.
You shouldn't get a benefit or direct your business based on what the tax code says. And that's the problem that I think we've got ourselves into. And I got to tell you, in all honesty, when you go through the tax code, you can make an argument for all of these exemptions. They made sense. Nobody came to Congress and said, hey, this is a really stupid idea, but let's do it anyway.
Right.
They were put there for very good reason. And these organizations, these groups, so forth, are going to fight to keep those provisions in that they've fought for over the years. But I think we've got to look beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Say what is best for the country.
That's an interesting point. We got to take a break, but maybe we'll have time later to circle back to that too, because it is one of those things that you brought up the entitlement programs. Can we get real tax reform here? It doesn't go anywhere near far enough, but can they really get rid of some of these things? So it'll be very interesting to hear your take on that. And again, we're here with Congressman Mike Simpson. We have to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about not just the tax bill, but how's Trump doing? How is he actually doing? Is there really some things happening behind the scenes that are positive? And why, say, perhaps we're surging to a 3% GDP growth that nobody expected? We'll be right back. Hello and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, of course, and I'm here with Congressman Mike Simpson. Fascinating conversation, Congressman, and thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are, but this is great stuff for our listeners here, and really appreciate what's going on there with the tax bill. Let's kind of shift over, if we could, to some of the other issues that maybe don't get this big banner right now of screaming and yelling about tax reform. Is Trump effective or is he disruptive? I guess we want a disruptive because this is a swamp, in our opinion, out here in the flyover country. It's a giant swamp, and we want somebody to come in and drain it. But is he too loud, too much tweeting, too many enemies? Is he actually accomplishing things behind the scenes? What's your opinion?
Well, I think he's actually accomplishing things, and I think he is disruptive. And as I've told people before, I've got no problem with somebody that comes in and disrupts things. Because why are you doing this? Why don't you do it this way? Or should we be doing this at all? And questions it and makes us examine the things that we're doing, the programs that we have, how we're funding them, and so forth. That's a healthy thing, and that's something we should be doing all the time anyway.
Mm.
So I don't mind the disruption that he's causing. In fact, I think that can be healthy. The unhealthy part is the distraction that sometimes comes about needlessly with some of his tweets, those types of things that I don't think are helpful in him accomplishing his agenda. But if you look at what he's done in terms of reducing rules and regulations, those types of things, I think he's been fairly effective. So, it's still a new presidency. We're still in the first year. I think things are moving along well. If we get this tax bill done, we will have done a lot. We need to come back to health care reform because we've still got to do that. And
at some point, we've got to get to entitlement reform.
Isn't health care really part of that, saying this is another entitlement? It certainly has grown into an entitlement, has it not?
Certainly it is. The entitlement state in this country is, if you looked at the federal budget about 30 years ago or 40 years ago, it was one-third entitlement programs. That was Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and those types of things. And two-thirds was discretionary spending. Now it's about 70% entitlement programs and only one-third discretionary spending. And if you look at that one-third that's discretionary spending, and by discretionary I mean that's what we appropriate money for every year, and that's pretty much everything you think of as government. Every program you can think of out there is discretionary except for the Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Now, of that one-third of the overall spending, over half of that is defense.
Hmm.
So now you're down to about 15% of the total budget of the federal government that is everything else, every other program. So we've been reducing discretionary spending over the last several years. The problem is that entitlements are growing faster than we've been able to reduce discretionary spending.
Hmm.
And if we don't reform the entitlement programs within about, I think it's about 10 years, the federal budget will be nothing but entitlements. That's it. Nothing else.
Hmm.
So we've got to make some tough choices. And the sad thing is we've known this for 20 or 30 years, but it was always easier to put off the reforms of the entitlement programs than to go after them because, as you know, the old saying was, like Social Security is the third rail in politics. If you touch it, you die.
Yep.
But we've got to be willing to make some tough decisions, not to affect people that are currently on the system or nearing retirement. But if you're a young person putting money into the Social Security system, if we don't change it now, you're going to get something like 73 cents back for every dollar you put in. That's not a very good investment.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not, and it certainly has not. Do you think that people will do this, or does it literally have to be on fire before we deal with it?
Congress generally reacts best to a fire.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
I do.
It's like a deadline. That's why we have deadlines, so that Congress will finally act. But I think I think more and more people are starting to realize that we've got to address this. President Bush tried to do it in his last term. He made some proposals on reforming the Social Security system. It would not have affected anybody that was 55 years or older. And when they did polling on it, of course, he got the heck beat out of him for it. But when they did polling on it, the people that opposed it were senior citizens. That would not affect.
Right.
The people that supported it were young people who, in poll after poll, will tell you that they believe they are more likely to see an alien than they are to get Social Security.
Yep. Yep.
So we've got to have the courage to do it. And if it costs some of us our elections, tough. We've got to go in and say, listen, this is for the good of the country. We've got to reform these programs. Because we can't go on the way we are.
No, we can't. But that's been the case for decades now, and we
sure.
do keep going on.
And if you don't see the date in the near future when Social Security is going to go bankrupt, and we're talking like 10 or 15 years, something like that. I can't remember the exact date. But if you don't see that deadline, it's easier to put it off for the next Congress to handle or the next one after that. We've been doing that for, like I say, 20 or 30 years. This is not a problem that we have been unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's knowing this. Now, the good thing about getting the economy growing is you get more people back to work, more people paying into the Social Security and the Medicare system. So, consequently, it extends the life of it out further and gives us more time to address this. But basically, what it comes down to is Congress has got to have the courage to tell the American people the truth about Social Security and Medicare and the implications for our budget in the long run, and have the courage to propose plans that will save it for people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I like your optimistic attitude about that. It just seems so entrenched. But anyway, I love it. I hope there's success in this tax. I hope the economy grows and build some momentum for the Republicans to pass some real reforms. It'd be awesome. Something
yeah,
we've all hoped
we need
for.
To do it. And that's, you know, this would be an interesting exercise to have
I don't expect it to happen, but it would be interesting to do, and that is to say, okay, we have no tax system. We're going to sunset it in 5 years or whatever, and write a tax code that is for the 21st century instead of one that is for the 19th and 20th century, and get rid of every exemption that exists and say, how low could we possibly get the rates to raise the necessary revenue to fund the federal government in the fairest, simplest way possible? Get rid of everything. And then you might get those rates down to, I don't know, 10, 12%.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, okay, this is what we can do. Now, if you want the home mortgage deduction, which I believe most Americans do, that 12% is going to have to be 15%. If you want charitable contribution deduction, that 15% is going to have to be 18%. I don't know what the numbers are. I'm just
sure, I totally get your
point. But give the American people a choice. I'll bet you $10 that a majority of American people will say, you give me the lowest possible tax rate you can get it, and I will decide how I want to spend my money.
Right on. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, we got to take a quick break here for Fox News, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the media, some of the things that are on your mind as well, Congressman, because you're doing committee work all the time. We're just talking about the big banner issues, but I'm sure there's some stuff out there, whether it's off the Education Committee, that all of Idaho will be interested in. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. I'm here, of course, with Congressman Mike Simpson, who's, boy, I can't imagine how busy D.C. is these days trying to get this tax reform done. But that's not the only issue out there. So, obviously, Congressman Simpson's been there a long time. How many years have you been in Congress now?
This is my 19th.
19th year. Wow. That's a long time back there in the swamp. But it, because
yeah,
of
time,
that...
time flies.
Exactly. But you're doing some work with the Appropriations Committee. We've got potential government shutdown next week, and you do a lot of work with education. And what are the biggest issues for Idaho? Idaho's growth is exploding. What are you seeing out there and hearing from your constituents right now?
Well, there's a couple things going on. On December 8th, potential for a government shutdown occurs because the continuing resolution to fund the government runs out at that time. Now, I don't expect a government shutdown. I think everybody agrees that that's not a good idea. But we've got to have some numbers. So the Appropriations Committee that I sit on, one of the senior members of the committee, and I chair the Energy and Water Subcommittee, we've got to have the numbers so that we can finish the appropriation bills that should have been done October 1st. We want to get that done before Christmas. And, of course, whenever you're doing that, there are a lot of issues that come up, whether it's what do you do with the DACA kids and those types of things. What do you do with the cost-sharing payments and other things? Those will all come up during the debate on the omnibus, trying to finish the appropriation bills for the last of the year. What's important in Idaho is... I chair the committee that funds the Idaho National Laboratory, which is a big economic driver in southeast Idaho, in fact, all of Idaho. So I've got to make sure, and working on, and have been in the past, try to make sure that there's adequate funding for our national labs, including the Idaho lab. We are starting next year. We will start writing the farm bill. It's a five-year farm bill, and this one expires, and then we will start writing a farm bill in the Agriculture Committee. So all of the ag industry in Idaho is obviously very interested in what gets put into this ag bill and what gets taken out and how it's changed and those types of things. So there's a lot that we're working on. I'm also working on a bill to try to change how we fund wildfires in the cost of fighting wildfires because, frankly, it's eating up more and more of the Forest Service budget. In fact, Forest Service is becoming the fire service rather than the Forest Service because about 52% of their budget goes just to fight wildfires, and that's growing substantially every year as these catastrophic wildfires. But unfortunately, we don't, for some reason, don't treat wildfires the same way we treat other natural disasters like hurricanes, tornadoes, and earthquakes. So I'm trying to change the funding formula of how we do that, the basic premise of how we fight wildfires and fund wildfires. So those are some of the things that I'm working on right now.
That should be very helpful, given what happened in California this year. It looked like it actually was much more of a natural disaster than just forests burning up and you lose a cabin or two. This was a big disaster. I would think that would carry some momentum to making those changes.
Well, I've been working on it for about 4 years now, and I will say I have the most interest in it now than I've ever had, and a lot of that is due to these catastrophic fires in California, where they just went through neighborhoods and just burned them out. It was horrific, and so actually we've got the Office of Management and Budget, the administration, the Speaker, and Senator Crapo is working on it on the Senate side. So we've all been working on it. I think we're going to get something done this year in terms of how we fund wildfires.
Congressman, your job is to represent Idaho, represent our interests, and people in the past famously have been voted in even into senility for all the pork they bring home. And yet I hear a tone from you that also sounds like not just state first, but country. The way you phrased it before was, if it's good for the economy, it's good for the country, it's good for you personally, when we're speaking of taxes. And so how do you balance that when you're thinking of national interest versus and when we take that into, say, the farm bill, we're classically an ag type, although it's not that big a part of the economy anymore. But that's comes kind of the roots here. And yet farmers do have a lot of pork. And so how do you balance that?
Well, if you look at the ag program, when you talk about a lot of pork, there's out of the total federal spending, agriculture takes up 0.02%.
Right. Nothing.
0.02%.
Okay.
So it's not a lot. In fact, if you look at the ag bill, the agricultural appropriation bill is about $20 billion. 80% of that is in food nutrition programs, food stamps and those types of things. What the ag bill has become more, and what it probably should be more than anything else, is it's crop insurance, helping with farmers with crop insurance and stuff. And that's been the main focus of it in the recent farm bills. And we try to improve that crop insurance program. It's not the old days where we paid people not to grow things and that
right.
kind of stuff, you know. That's gone away. So what I look at is, and I'll tell you, I'll give you an example of the Energy and Water Committee that I sit on. Obviously, I have a great deal of interest in the Idaho National Laboratory, but I can't focus my total attention on the Idaho lab and ignore the other labs.
Mm-hmm.
It is a laboratory complex, which is the crown jewels of our research in this country. And what happens at Oak Ridge is just as important to what happens in Idaho. It's just as important what happens in Hanford and other places around the complex. I think we have 19 or 17 national labs. So I'm every bit as interested in making sure that they're successful as I am making sure that the Idaho National Lab is successful. And you have to kind of have that attitude if you're going to be successful as chairman of one of these committees. You can't just be parochial interest. It has to be national interest that you're looking at. That doesn't mean that I don't look at the Idaho Lab and make sure that they've got the resources necessary to do the things that they do out there. And if you go out there, it's incredible what they do. So that's kind of the attitude you have to have.
Makes sense. It does seem to be that you can certainly take care of it, but it isn't all about every single little bit coming to the state. If the country's doing well, we're going to do well, right?
That's right.
It's good.
That's right.
All right, we got to take our final break, and when we come back, much more to talk about. What's going to happen with health care comes to mind. We'll see what else flows. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and I'm here, of course, with Congressman Mike Simpson, who's been our congressperson for, 19 years now, right?
Yep.
That's a long time. That's a long time, and you've built up a good little, with that much experience, you get to be on a lot of different committees and chair some of them. So that's a very big benefit.
Yeah, whether you like it or not, Congress is a seniority-based system, and if you're going to get into a position where you chair some of these committees, and obviously when you do, you have more influence over what goes on, you have to be here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm the first congressman from Idaho to ever chair one of the 12 subcommittees on the Appropriations Committee. It just takes some time to get the seniority to be able to do that.
Right, right. Well, that's an argument against each of the individual states and why probably the states don't go with any kind of time limitations on serving.
Yeah, if you had term limits, it would be, if you took the states of California, New York, Texas, Ohio, they would probably chair all the committees.
Exactly. So we've been kind of going around on some of these issues, and I want to circle back now, though, to health care, because it was a pretty epic failure, not of the Congress but Senate, and that we couldn't get that done, couldn't get that stopped. And as you mentioned before, the entitlement programs that people have are now 70% of all the budget, and within 10 years will be 100%. That's a problem, and health care has to be addressed. It's an enormous problem, what we have here. What do you see happening going forward?
Well, I think personally what's going to happen is that Obamacare is going to fail on its own. Prices are going substantially higher than anybody anticipated, even when we said that when the President Obama said that people would see a $2,000 reduction in their health care costs, and if you like your doctor, you can keep it. If you like your health care plan, you can keep it. All of that kind of stuff. Most of us said that's not true, and it turned out not to be true. You've seen premiums going up and deductibles going up. You can have health insurance, but if you can't afford the premiums or can't afford the deductible, you don't really have health insurance.
Right.
So we've got to do something different. I wish I had the answer to what that is. If I did, maybe we would have been able to pass the health care reform earlier this year. But I don't think, some people say, just go in and repeal Obamacare. The problem with that is you're not going back to the system that existed before Obamacare was put into place, because a lot of the people that had those plans that are not offered anymore because they didn't fit Obamacare standards,
right.
Even though they might have liked their plan, would have liked to have kept it, insurance companies don't offer those plans anymore. So what we've got to do is find a replacement. And the replacement, to me, is allowing people to have more individual decision in their health care and take responsibility for that those decisions that they make in their health care system. No matter what you do, even if you repeal it, there is still going to be some subsidies for people who can't afford health care. And I'm okay with that. But if you looked at before Obamacare was passed, if you took the, I think it was 36 million people they said were uninsured at the time, they almost divided it up equally into four quadrants. One of them were people who qualified for a health care system, either Medicaid or Medicare or some, but chose not to take it. A quarter of them were people who qualified for a employer-sponsored health care plan, but chose not to take it. A quarter of them were people who could afford health care if they wanted to. They just didn't go out and buy it. And about a quarter of them were people who literally could not afford a health care system, could not afford health care insurance. If we had concentrated on trying to address that quarter of the people who truly could not afford it, then I think we would have gone a long ways towards solving the health care problem in this country. If you can afford health care and you choose not to do it, should the government come in and say, no, you have to? That's what I disagree with, is the government saying, we're going to make your decision for you. You're going to have health care. That's your top priority. And so one of two things will happen, I think, over the next 3 or 4 years. We will go to a more free market-oriented system where we help people who truly need it, but we leave the decision of whether you buy health care to you, the individual, a more market-oriented system, or we will move to a one-payer system, England, Canadian sort of system. One of those two, it's going to fall one way or the other. We're kind of on a nice edge right now.
Mm-hmm. What do you predict? We're going to go with individual freedom or government? Which way do you think it'll fall?
Right now, looking at the mood of the country and stuff, I would almost, if I was a betting man, I'd almost go 60-40. It's going to go to a one payer system. I'm totally opposed to that. I don't think that's good for our healthcare system, and I don't think that that's good for the healthcare of the individuals. So I want to go to a more market oriented system, which we can do, but whether we have the will to do it is hard to say right now.
Doesn't seem we do have the will, but let's hope.
You know, it's the old the government will pay for the healthcare system on a one payer system. And if you go over to England, you go over to Canada, and you ask people there how they like the healthcare system, everybody says, "Yeah, I like it." That's because generally most people don't use the healthcare system. You need to poll the people who actually use the healthcare system to see how they like it.
Right.
And when you go to Ireland and you see patients in hospitals, in gurneys, in the hallways, and you ask the hospital administrator, why aren't these people in a room? They say, because there's no rooms. And there's no incentive for us to build additional rooms under our hospital.
Right.
And when you see people with serious conditions in Canada and other places coming to the United States to get their health care, maybe that ought to tell you something about the healthcare system in Canada and England and stuff. So I just don't think that is the best way to handle healthcare in this country. And I will admit we have an expensive healthcare system. We also have basically the best healthcare system in the country in the world. Most inventions and so forth are developed here in this country. Most cures and stuff. So we can do better. But it is, I tell you, it is a complicated system.
Yes. It is. We got to get everybody in the room, all the interested parties.
Yes, you do.
And hammer it out. It's a tough one. It's a tough nut. It's 20% of the economy and growing. It's a tough nut to get. Congressman, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. And thank you for your good work back in D.C., we appreciate you getting
David,
into this.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it also.
Have a great rest of the day. And we are out of here now. And have a great rest of the day yourselves.